Every business has an ambition. PayPal Open is the platform designed to help you grow into yours. With business loans so you can expand and access to hundreds of millions of PayPal customers worldwide. And your customers can pay all the ways they want. With PayPal, Venmo, Pay Later, and all major cards. So you can focus on scaling up. When it's time to get growing, there's one platform for all business. PayPal Open. Grow today at paypalopen.com. Loan subject to approval in available locations.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast on Friday, the 15th of March, 2019. On the podcast today, I have Neil Ricketts, Chief Executive Officer of Vasarion, and Neil talks about how they've extended their relationship with the Tungsu Optoelectronic Technology Company with a letter of intent. Also on the podcast, Chris Bailey, founder of FinancialOrbit.com, covers the following companies: Restaurant Group, RTN, JD Weatherstone, and Page Group. All have news out today. Plus, I have Russ Mould, Investment Director at stockbroker AJ Bell. Talks about the following subjects: Brexit, the effects on the economy, also covers the companies Czar and Burford Capital Bonds. And as always, I have two lists for you. The top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours, and the top five most liked RNSs too. By the way, you can see top 10 versions of both these lists at voxmarkets.co.uk on the front page of our site, where you'll also see lots of other content, including stuff from SP Angel, The Morning View: waning growth outlook helps gold prices. Also, there's an article on Predator Oil and Gas, an article on Bidstack, and lots of other content at voxmarkets.co.uk.
Are you tired of missing news about stock market companies you follow? The Vox Markets app helps investors stay ahead by making sure you never miss an important update. Find out more at voxmarkets.co.uk/app.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Neil Ricketts, Chief Executive Officer of Vasarion. VRS is the ticker there. Neil, thanks for joining me.
Good morning. A bit of a rainy day today, Justin, so hopefully we'll brighten up a few people today.
Yeah. Well, listen, are you at home? Are you in China? Because it seems like the more and more business you're doing in there, you might as well move to China, Neil.
No. Unfortunately, China's down to the rest of the team. My focus at the moment is on the US. We've got some very important dates coming up, and I tend to do most of my work now at night.
Okay.
So on the West Coast timeline, and then we've got Matt and Chris, and obviously I'm still involved with what's going on in China.
Yeah, okay. Well, you've announced a letter of intent with Tungsu Optoelectronic. We'll get into the details of that. But as always, Neil, like I said, we assume people know about the company. You've been on quite a few times. But if there's someone listening and they're not quite familiar with Vasarion, just summarise what you're about, please, Neil.
So we're an advanced materials group who takes technology from some of the greatest universities in the UK, and then we try to make them into commercial products. And that's what we've been able to demonstrate over the last 12 months, is this process we're going through to take really great ideas through to production.
Yeah. Okay. So back in on the 7th of November, you signed a memorandum of understanding with Tungsu, and now you're upping that and forwarding or sort of cementing the relationship or advancing it with a letter of intent. Can you tell us, first of all, what is the relationship and what does this mean?
So this is a process we're going through, as I just mentioned. So, you know, we start off with an inquiry. We then have an NDA. We both release some information. The customer releases what their application is and what they're trying to achieve. And we release how we think we can solve that problem. And then if that gets through that stage, then it'll go to a kind of memorandum of understanding. So this is a very general conversation, you know, that we're going to try and work together, and that we are, you know, we've got an aligned vision of how it works And then when we get into the letter of intent, then it starts to get very, very much more specific. So the customer in Tong Shu's instance might have, you know, multiple applications for us. They're a very, very big engineering group in China, lots and lots of different divisions, and we're dealing with this particular division. But even that division can be doing everything from batteries with our guys out in Spain, right the way through to, in this case, electric heaters. And so the letter of intent is really about specifying exactly how we're going to achieve those goals that we've identified in the memorandum of understanding. Yeah. So it's very much a process.
And what is the process after this then? Where does it go to next? After the letter of intent, everything goes to plan, what's next?
Well, you see, in the letter of intent, it actually, you know, kind of states, and it I wouldn't get too het up over whether it says in the title memorandum of understanding or letter of intent. It's about the content of that document, and it's about the intent of that document. So in this particular case, this is all about setting up this joint scientific committee to overcome the challenges. And this particular challenge is about radically altering the way that we design houses. And one of the problems China has is, you know, exponential growth. So if you're lucky enough to travel to China as I have, then you see these massive developments, huge apartment blocks, masses of apartments going up. The problem is if it was in the UK, then we would have a water-based central heating system with a gas boiler or a an oil boiler or whatever. Well, that's not going to work in the future. So when they're looking at these developments, they're looking very much, and China is very, very good at advancing very quickly. They have to. Mm-hmm. At ways of overcoming those challenges. In this particular case, what they've decided is that they want to move to electric heaters, which are far more controllable, and if they're powered by renewable energy, far more efficient. And very easy to deploy in very large scale. So this is a fundamental change in the way that we're building buildings. And it's the same as their developments in electric vehicles, because they haven't necessarily got the inertia that we've got in the West. They can deploy new technology so much quicker than we can. And that's what we're seeing. We're seeing this, you know, going into the next stage. And Tong Shu is one of those companies that's been talking to the big provinces about rolling out this technology on a wide scale.
Yeah, well, you're right. When you have, like, they are almost the most populous country in the world, 1.5 billion. When you're building things in the scale they have to find new ways of doing it, like you say, because you can't use older models not designed for that kind of scale. So I suppose they have to advance that. And coincidentally, actually, yesterday, Philip Hammond, it was drowned out by Brexit, but he announced that gas boilers are going to be banned in this country now from new houses in 2025. So even we are moving that way, you know?
Yeah, and this is what we're seeing. So we're seeing a lot more renewable energy, and where Philip Hammond is saying, you know, 2020, 2025 for some of these technologies, whether it be EVs or renewable energy or whatever, the Chinese are just getting ahead of the game there, and they're able to, because they haven't got the infrastructure in place, they haven't got tower blocks, you know, they're having to build them right now. They can actually be a little bit more adventurous in their technologies. And the thing for this has already been proven. This isn't something that is kind of Star Trek, you know. This is actually technology that can be deployed now. And so for us, it's all about taking this technology that we acquired in Cambridge, the graph inks, the printable inks technology that came out of the powerhouse at the University of Cambridge, and finding a customer who wants to use that technology in scale. And so our job is to sit in the middle of that, and we provide the capacity, we provide the knowledge around how to scale up those processes. So, you know, it's exciting news for the business, there's no doubt about it. What we've been talking about up to now is our Nanine project, mm-hmm. our very high quality graphene nanoplatelets that are finding uses in everything from aircraft through to, you know, construction and so on. And this is the significance of this announcement is that it's a completely new product. So, you know, when you look at AIM companies and they've got one product and they're in one sector, and yeah, we analyzed that, and we worked in those businesses, myself and Chris, and for us, we didn't think that we thought that that was too high a risk. So what we're doing is de-risking the business. It's hard work, though. It means that our teams have to deal with two or three products in, up to 50 different sectors. Although we're focused on the five key ones for the moment, let's not forget that there's a huge number behind that. And so for us as a management team, in effect, but it makes the proposition so much better for investors, we believe.
Yeah, well, do you know what? China is the place to be. I know, America are trying their darnest to slow down their growth, but it's not going to happen. Let's be honest, China will be the biggest economy in the world. And like I said, especially if they're embracing new tech, which they seem to be doing. So it's an exciting place to be, isn't it?
It's an unbelievable place. I mean, I would urge anybody, if they get the opportunity to go, and even if they can't go physically, to do the research around some of the provincial ambitions and, the scale of ambition there is, you just can't comprehend in the UK or in Europe or even in the West. I mean, the number of high-speed trains they're building, the speed of those trains. I think one of our contractors that we announced a collaboration with had done 18,000 kilometres of railway. It's unbelievable, the number of buildings that are going up, the number of companies that are developing there, and the sheer scale of their manufacturing ambition is unbelievable.
Yeah, okay. Well, final thing, Anil, you well rehearsed this. If someone's listening to this, like the sound of what you're doing, but are not following the story on Vox, give them three reasons why they should hit that follow button and add you to their watch list, please.
So the first one that I always talk about is the level of commitment that we've got from not only central government, but people like Innovate UK, the University of Manchester and the University of Cambridge, to really take this technology that was isolated in the UK in 2005 and to make something of it. And so we have this very wide network. The second thing is that we're now demonstrating a process, a very logical way of being able to take this new technology that I just mentioned and actually getting it through those stages. So it doesn't matter whether it's a design phase or it's a commercial phase, or in this particular case, getting it from an MOU to a letter of intent. And the third thing is that I'm the largest shareholder, and therefore, all of my aims and ambitions are always aligned to those long-term holders. And despite any turbulence that we might go through, we've got a great strategy that we are now showing the signs of delivering.
Marvellous stuff, Neil. Good to chat to you as always, and no doubt we'll be catching up in the not-too-distant future. Thanks very much.
Well, hopefully the weather will be better, Justin.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Chris Bailey, founder of FinancialOrbit.com. You all right, Chris?
Yeah, very good. Thanks, very good.
It's odd because, you're regularly on a Thursday and it's a Friday day, and so I'm thinking, I forgot the time and everything. I do apologise, but...
No, don't worry, no.
You are my eyes and ears on the larger cap world. I like sort of small micro caps, but I do like, and every now and again, I think it's a nice sort of growth and dividend play. I'll go for it, if it's the right price. But stocks with news out today. What are we starting with, Chris?
Yeah, well, we've got to start with Restaurant Group, which we've talked about before a few weeks ago when the CEO resigned despite having, spent a lot of money on Wagamama. Obviously, Restaurant Group, where they're known for Frankie and Benny's, they're known for Chiquitos, they're known for sort of other kind of slightly not particularly trendy brands. They spent a fortune on Wagamama. That tanked the shares, particularly after the money raising. And then he decided to go, which just seemed bizarre. That was a few weeks ago. Today, he's still hung around enough time to present the numbers, and the numbers, it's all hope about Wagamama, because still the underlying business is seeing like-for-like sales going down, profits going down, dividends going down. So that business, the Frankie and Benny's and related business, still isn't really working. We know it's competitive, that area. All the hopes were on Wagamama, but yet the CEO is going. So to me, that's kind of an interesting sort of combination of events.
I always laugh, it's a bit cruel, but when a CEO steps aside and the share price, they must look at the share price just to check, and they see it's up nearly 10% and think, oh.
He resigned a month ago, so the shares tanked on that, so I guess he can take a small bit of comfort.
Yeah, yeah.
But you're right that the shares have reversed that loss today. They're up 10%, and I think it's all on hope on Wagamama. They haven't appointed a new CEO. That's still to be decided. They've appointed the ex-chair of Wagamama, a guy called Alan Layton, who's well known to Asda watchers from many years back. He's now come onto the board. But I have to say, when I look at the numbers, it's all on hope on Wagamama that they're going to continue being this wondrous growth machine. But otherwise, the rest of the business, frankly, is still decidedly mixed. They've leveraged up. Sure, the shares are up 10% today, but take a look at that longer-term chart. It is still under pressure. I'm not chasing this one. I don't think this is the turn. I'm going to wait for some numbers. Let's see if they can really make Wagamama work, or whether they've actually just bought it at its peak. Yeah. And that's the trouble in today's world. When you're buying companies, when you're building up your debt base, you've got to be so careful. And it's prudent just to wait. Let's see if they start to turn this thing around. But I have to say, I'm wondering whether they've just paid a bit too much at the top of the market for Wagamama, and it's just going to be a bit disappointing under their stewardship, but we'll see.
Yeah, do you know what? You said it's all about Wagamama. I looked, and the first line is basically acquisition of high quality business in Wagamama. But you look at the financial highlights, it's almost like they should say like for like sales down 2%, but we still got Wagamama. Adjusted profit down, but we still got Wagamama. It's like every line they should put at the end. We still have Wagamama though.
It's completely binary, and that's the thing. You know, we know Wagamama's all right. You know, you go there and there's queues outside my local one on a regular basis. But you know, is it that exciting? Is it going to be that much of a growth machine? I don't really know.
Yeah, where can they put it? I think it's limited opportunities. You need sort of high footfall shopping centres, and I think there's pretty much one in every shopping centre now. Where do you go with that? You know.
Yeah, that's it. So I think really the key for them is making things like Frankie and Benny's and Chiquita and whatever work a bit better. If they can get those ones to work a bit better, then maybe there's a story. But without them, I think you've got the drag there. Wagamama might do all right, might still grow a bit, but you've paid a bunch of money in order to get to that position, and you know shareholders are not going to be overly impressed. So I'm not chasing today's bounce. I'm remaining resolutely on the sidelines, but I might do a field trip to see if Wagamama's, you know, going to excite me as a restaurant or not. I must admit, I'm a bit cool on it when I've been there before. It's all right, but just all right. I haven't, you know, scurried back very rapidly.
Yeah, do you know what I like in debt too? And I try to come up with a nice analogy, but I like it a bit to an anchor. You know, so you've got a speedboat, and the debt is the size of the anchor. Now, if it just falls off the back there, you can plough through the water. If it's not too heavy, it'll float fine, and you can still power away. But as that debt gets bigger, the anchor gets bigger, drags you back a bit further. Like I said, Wagamama may be sleek and trendy and light, but if you've got a massive debt there and the others are not performing well, it's still dragging you down, isn't it, you know?
That's right. So you've got to be careful, particularly in today's world. You know, if the consumer was rampant, then maybe we'd have a different view. But I'm afraid, clearly, despite, you know, if we get political clarity on, you know what, you know, that changes a bit, but not, I don't think, sufficiently. We'll see. Moving on, Wetherspoons is also out today with some numbers. Obviously, JD Wetherspoons, well-known pub brand, and obviously a deeply excitable executive chairman, Tim Martin, who, as per normal in today's update, has rambled on about his political views at length, which you might find amusing or annoying, depending, I guess, on your particular affiliation. But there you go. Guess it's his baby, so he sort of uses that forum to chat about stuff.
He comes across, doesn't he, as like a farmer. You know, I always see him as a farmer rather than the businessman, you know?
That's the hairstyle, I reckon. But the thing is, I think that's a well-quaffed image, if you like, because, you know, he wants to be a man of the people and, you know, maybe politically as well as kind of socially. And obviously, Wetherspoons, it's an interesting business because it's sort of, I wouldn't call it high-end, it's kind of sort of mass market, perhaps even a little bit lower mass market, but it's kind of interesting looking at the numbers. Good like-for-like sales, 6.6%, you can't argue with that. But profits down, once again talking about wages being a big impact. You know, I guess he would say, look, we've got to pay our staff a decent wage. You know, we've committed ourselves now to a lot of the living wage stuff, and that's impacted our profits. And this is why the shares have sort of, you look at the share price chart over the last year, they've come back, and they've come back because of the extra costs. The actual business is still attracting customers through their doors. So a bit of a funny one. I ran a couple of numbers quickly, and you know, it's sort of Wetherspoons is kind of it's sort of comme ci comme ça on the old valuation. It's not particularly cheap, it's not particularly expensive. So yeah, I'm sort of looking at it thinking an interesting insight into the consumer, but perhaps it says everything that, you know, they're still getting the revenue through, but they're having trouble converting that to profits because of the cost base inflation, particularly wages. Yeah. So yeah, you know, I guess if they spend all their extra wages, their staff on beer, then Wetherspoons are going to be laughing, but it never quite works out like that. So yeah. You know, the shares are a bit they're up a touch today, but I don't know, I'm not sensing a great need to buy this one. I've been infused by names such as Green King and others in you know recent months, but you know even they've re-rated a bit. This one's been a bit left behind, but I can't get that excited about it, to be honest. It's another one where the share price chart has fallen and I'm sort of, you know, kind of chilling really on it.
Yeah, I heard that, I think it was on Radio 5 Live, Wake Up to Money this morning, I think it was, but they're actually selling a couple of pubs now rather than acquiring. So I think that's very telling. And like you say, like-for-like sales up 7%, 6%, but profit before tax down nearly 19%. So it's, you know, it's a mixed picture there. But the fact that they're selling off pubs is and to, fair play to Tim, he managed to get 1, 2, 3... Well, 5 words into his comments before he mentions Brexit. That's literally that's the fifth word.
I mean, you know, that's a result. Normally it's word one or two, but it is, you know, you should always read the regulatory news reviews, you know, as an investor. It's always insightful. I think it's fair to say the JD Wetherspoon one is a little different. There's lots of good operational stuff there, but there's a lengthy Brexit related ramble, which, as I say, you either love or you hate depending on your particular affiliations. But there you go. It's a bit different, and I guess it gets the headlines on a quiet Friday.
Yeah, exactly. It basically starts off with saying that the vexed debate about Brexit has continued since the referendum nearly 3 years ago. Okay, so what, Tim? What's that going to do with, you know, selling beer and curries or whatever and cheap food? Right, let's crack on. What's anything else there, Chris?
Well, the other one's got the other one today, and again we're delving into slightly left field territory, but I think it's interesting is Page Group, the old Michael Page Group recruitment business. Very short but kind of striking news update today. The CFO's taking temporary charge because the CEO has apparently seriously hurt his back on a skiing holiday, which obviously good wishes on his full recovery, but it kind of struck me that, you know, key man risk and related is, you know, can be kind of important. And funnily enough, you know, for a recruitment company, obviously the CEO can be an important sort of player. So, you know, kind of interesting. The shares haven't done too much on it this morning, but it just struck me that the recruitment companies have been struggling. If you look at the share price of Page Group and many of the others, you know, they've exhibited a pretty similar pattern, to be honest, to Restaurant Group and JD Wetherspoon. You know, they're well off their highs of the last year. And obviously that's because people are a little bit concerned about UK Economy Inc. and where do we go from here? Page Group is not just a UK business. It has a big global operation as well in recruitment. But the UK is clearly influential and an important market. But, you know, at this sort of challenging time, not good for your CEO to be a bit croc. So, you know, best wishes to him on his recovery. But, kind of an interesting one when the company has to fess up to such a, you know, an incident, really.
Yeah, I think it's odd that what he surely can do his job remotely. If he can't, they shouldn't have any problems recruiting, should they?
Yeah, well, that's right. Well, you'd hope they've got a database, but the old joke about recruitment companies that you know, the assets walk out the door each evening. Well, obviously he can't even get in the door at the moment because it's unfortunately old hospital. But but there you go. Well, I think the message from that is don't go skiing.
Exactly. You know, it's more dangerous new thing actually, skiing, isn't it?
Oh, I think horse riding, it's got to be the most dangerous thing. But yeah, anyway,
I think look at Michael Schumacher, right? All those years driving at 200 miles an hour. In a flimsy car, and then all of a sudden, you know, he has a massive accident on the slopes. It just shows how, I suppose, you're not expecting it. But there we go. Marvellous stuff, Chris. Thank you for that, and we'll catch up next week, fella.
We'll speak soon. Sounds a plan. See you then.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Russ Mould, Investment Director at stockbroker AJ Bell. You're right, Russ.
I'm very well, Justin. How are you?
I'm not too bad. It's been. Do you know what? The weather this week and you know, it's sort of reflected what's happening in the political environment, isn't it?
It's a pretty good analogy. Yes, I hadn't thought of that, but I like it. Yeah,
it's all over the. It's all over the place, basically.
All over the shop.
I know.
Yeah. Tempest tossed, I think, is probably the how Theresa May feels at the moment. So.
Yeah. Well, do you know what? It's so annoying what's going on. It's dragging on. But I sort of pay more attention, of course, I'm sure you do, because you look at the sort of financial and the investment implications of it all,
mm-hmm.
you know, and there's no doubt, you know, people are uncertain, they're pulling investment or at least pausing investment. Of course, that has a massive effect.
And so, that's the worry.
And is there any way of knowing or, I mean, of telling how much we have lost permanently temporarily?
There's no counterfactual, so we'll never know, really. You know, the Bank of England has got its forecast saying that, you know, that we might lose this, we might lose that. And we've had the spring statement this week. You know, Chancellor Philip Hammond said he wanted to deliver a non-event, and he certainly succeeded there. But, you know, what you did get was, you know, the Office for Budget Responsibility slightly cut its GDP forecast for this year down to 1.2% growth, and then slightly raised them going forward. So you by the end of 2023, you roughly came out the same. But trend growth of 1.4 to 1.6%, you're not exactly breaking eggs with a big stick anyway. I mean, I guess the theory is, yeah, we are seeing companies hold back on investment, possibly hold back on employment decisions, although unemployment's, you know, at 40-odd year highs, lows at the moment, and employment is at the highest level since records date back to 1971. So that's got, you'd like to think, would be a good thing.
Yeah.
But if I was running a company, I would probably be just minding my P's and Q's and holding off a little bit just until you know exactly where you stand. So I guess the counter argument to that is, well, when we know where we stand, you may get a bit of a snap back and a bit of a catch up. So we will have to see. I think what you are seeing from looking at it through the narrow prism of investment, you know, there's been several stories, you know, over Trustnet, Morningstar, Financial Times and those other reputable data providers talking about fund flows out of UK equity funds and out of UK assets in general. I think I heard a figure quoted the other day on the radio of £1 trillion has been moved out of the UK by banks and financial services companies simply as part of their contingency planning for Brexit, as they set up businesses in Dublin, Amsterdam, Paris, Frankfurt to have a contingency just in case there's a hard Brexit and UK financial services providers lose their passporting rights and ability to sell easily and frictionlessly into Europe. And I can believe that number, and that's just the disclosed stuff. Mm-hmm. But I think equally, the fact that you are seeing money coming out of UK equity funds leads me to think that, you know, if you're a contrarian, this is probably one of the times you might need to be looking at UK stocks overall. I mean, I know that the global economic outlook is cloudy. You know, I think you've got some concerns there, but same as I have. But equally, you know, the UK, it's underperformed horribly since June 16 and the vote. It's clearly unloved, judging by the fund flows. And if it's underperformed and unloved, it's potentially undervalued.
Yeah,
and, you know, it's the old adage, you can have good news and you can have cheap stocks, you just can't have both at the same time. And, you know, one of the things that we've been looking at here, and with my Refinitiv data, I can only take it back so far, but, you know, the premium that you're getting for the yield, equity yield on the FTSE 100 relative to the 10-year gilt yield is as high as I can find it. Certainly it is since the financial crisis. I mean, historically, you know, in the 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s, gilts offered a premium yield to equities because they had to, because you don't get any capital gain potential from gilt. So they needed, so people were looking for a premium yield there. Plus the UK had an awful record for inflation. So you were looking for a higher yield there. Yeah. But now with a dividend yield on the FTSE 100 for 2019, roughly 4.9%, the 10-year gilt yield at 1.2, that's a 370 basis point premium. Now in the past, great financial crisis, some of the Greek wobble and the Chinese growth scare, when that premium hit 2 percentage points, the market bounced. It's now at 3.7. So I guess there are two issues here. One, the 10-year gilt yield, you can argue, is potentially artificially low. I mean, inflation's near 2 for starters. The Bank of England is holding that down through quantitative easing. So you can argue, well, you've got to be mind your eye with one. And clearly on the dividend yield, you've got to make sure that that's safe. And Marks and Spencer's have cut this week. Oh, sorry, a couple of weeks ago. Standard Life has stopped growing its dividend. Paddy Power Betfair has stopped growing its dividend. So it is, and you do look at some of the yields there and think, well, if there is a recession or a big bump, then some of those dividend yields might look at risk. But nevertheless, that's a 3.7 percentage point premium is huge. It would lead you to think that equities are relatively cheap. And although I can only get the data back to the 80s, A colleague was at a fund manager lunch last week, and they'd taken the data, Clever Clogs, back to 1900. And the dividend yield premium over the 10-year bond yield, they reckon, is at its highest since 1914. So they would argue, applying that, that again, for all the fact that they're unloved and there's uncertainty and yada, 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 UK stocks are cheap. And that, I think, is a possible argument. And I think you're just going to have to be monumentally patient, given that our chums in Westminster are doing their best to...
yeah, doing their best to mess it up. So let me ask you a personal question. If you were an MP now, it doesn't matter what party you're in, because it's not party politics anymore. No one knows who's doing what. So if you were there and you were faced with these two options, which was going for a May's deal or delaying, I don't know what you delay for... What would you go for? From a sort of thinking about businesses now, what would you go for?
I mean, the May deal isn't a great one. I mean, I think that's pretty, and that's your problem. The issue is that it's all very well saying, well, we won't have that, but then you've got to get the EU to come up with something else.
Yeah.
So it's a bit of a devil's choice, really. Yes. I think from a democratic perspective, you've got to vote with the May deal.
Because that's
what the people voted for, and you're looking at all sorts of unpleasant political and democratic implications of not implementing the will of the people. Economically, you're going to have to make some compromises. You've got so many vested interests here, nobody's prepared to bend, but in the end, you're going to have to give something. You know, it's the old thing, you personally can get pretty much anything you want, so long as you help other people get what they want. And at the moment, nobody's prepared to budge, so nobody's getting anything, which I don't think is a satisfactory situation for anybody. I think from a business perspective and from a market perspective, you're not going to get a perfect deal. That's just the way it is. The EU can't give out too many bones because it doesn't want to encourage the Italians, the Portuguese, the Greeks, the Spanish, and all sorts of other malcontents to start coming with their hand out. So they've got to play relatively tough. So I think there is going to have to be some ground given. Whether that's what Brexit voters want, the deal that they're going to get, I guess that's a separate issue. But I think if faced with the Hobson's choice that you've got, or as they say in Italian, a choice between two cancers and a shelter tra due cancri, you probably end up having to go with the deal just to try and give us some basis for going forwards.
Yeah, okay, cool. Marvellous
stuff. But I'm glad it's a choice I don't have to make, but I think that's the way you'd probably have to go. Swallow your pride and... Yeah. Try and get some sort of momentum going.
Exactly. Okay, well, let's look at...
So that's a bit of macro for this week.
Yeah, exactly. Obviously, we can't avoid Brexit because everyone's... I mean, we're even watching CNBC. It's almost... It's not dominating, but it takes up a large part of their output now, you know, in America. So it's amazing how it's dominating. Cool. Well, let's look at stocks. What are you looking at, Russ?
Yeah, so just one small cap and one income angle today. So the small cap is Czar, where I've hardly covered myself in glory. And then the income action is actually coming from a bond this week, which is something I don't think you and I have ever talked about before.
No. Okay, it was Czar.
You don't sound too excited about it either, may I say.
It's hard to get excited with bonds, isn't it? But, you know, it's a stable kind of growth. But, you know...
There you are.
Yeah, I've often wondered how people get passionate about, you know, these big bond players. I mean...
Oh, no, bond spots are very, very excitable people in their own sweet way.
Yeah, cool. All right, what's happened with Czar?
Sharp downhill. Take a breath. Yeah. Yes, look at the chart. I mean, it's just like, oh, it's enough to give you a nosebleed. Unfortunately, all the way down. So Cambridge-based FTSE small cap company, small cap and getting smaller, down to £96 million now. We first looked at it in summer 18 at 260p, and the shares have halved since then. So sorry about that, everybody. It's one of those turnaround stocks that just hasn't turned around. And that's what you get sometimes. It is a technological leader in digital print heads for... You know, industrial printing. It's got a fantastic technological position, which is what attracted me to it. And it already had three profit warnings when we first looked at it, because the legacy ceramics business was going away and it was ramping up new print heads. So the problem has been, surprise, surprise, ceramics have gone down quicker than we thought, and the new stuff has not come through as quickly as we thought. They were one of the very few companies to put a profit warning out between Christmas and New Year, which is, you know, is always a bit of a bad sign. And then we just had a trading statement at the start of the week. No profit warning as such, ladies and gentlemen. Revenues in line with expectations at £64 million. But they did say they were taking a £7 million inventory write-down and debtors write-down because they've been left with some old stuff that hasn't sold as quickly as they thought. They're still working on some Chinese partnerships. And most importantly, they've still got a net cash balance sheet, just under £28 million. Although the bad news is that's come down from £37 million at the first half, so they are starting to chomp their way through it. But at least the clock isn't ticking on the turnaround in that they have the cash. They've now got results coming up end of the month where they're going to be outlining some more strategic options. I guess the cash means I can tough it out, but it's not a very pleasant situation to find yourself in. A little bit like that Hobson's choice with a Brexit vote, I suppose. For profit warnings in, you'd like to think we're kind of getting to the end of the bad news and that it'll start to see some traction on the new product cycle, but we're clearly going to have to be very patient.
Yeah, that chart is not looking good.
It's awful, isn't it?
Where's the bottom? It's almost like it has a support level around about 150 odd. And it's broken down below that to 114. Maybe the pound is the magic round figure.
There you are. Let's see what happens. It's not pretty, so mea culpa on that one.
Right, let's go to the sexy bond.
And that's why boring bond's going to be exciting, because your downside's protected, unfortunately, unless the thing actually goes bust. Now, Burford Capital is the company, and you may remember this. We actually looked at it in one of our first podcasts together, March 17. I've dug out my records. We looked at it at £7.35, and I pulled the ripcord on it at 12 quid, thinking I was clever. Well, the shares are now 19 quid, so I'm not that clever after all. But, you know, never turned down a 50% profit, but it would have clearly been a heck of a lot more than that. Now, remember, this is a litigation lawyer, and it actually seeds cases and then either sells them on, makes progress with them, or even takes a percentage of any winnings that its clients happen to cop. And it's just had some very strong full-year results. Sales up 23%, return on invested capital of 86%, a number of gains and cases sold on for a profit up to 26, and it's actually made $1.3 billion worth of case commitments both last year and this year. So the growth it showed you in 2017 doesn't seem to be a one-off right now. Now, if you're an equity punter, you might think, actually, we've got such fantastic momentum here, 19 times forward earnings this year, 17 times next. Happy days for double-digit earnings per share growth, and you may well continue to row in and follow the Momo. If you're a little bit more nervous, Burford has issued four bonds, all of which have gone to funding that commitment package, and they mature in 2022, 2024, 2025, and 2026, and they come with different coupons. The one that slightly catches my eye at the minute is the 2025 6 1/8% coupon, because it's trading just below par at 99. Now, it's a dollar-denominated bond, so you need to think about the currency, and that's a possible wrinkle there, but you're currently getting around a yield, a running yield, and a yield to maturity of around 6.4%, which, frankly,
pretty decent,
that's pretty set. Now, don't forget, it's an unrated bond, and it's probably a junior bond, so if, God forbid, Burford did get itself into financial trouble, you're down the pecking order of creditors, but you're still well above the pecking order of the humble shareholder who's absolutely dead bottom. Yeah. If you don't want the currency risk, maybe look at, so this is Burford 4, BUR4 is the EPIC, the 2025 6 and an 8th. If you want sterling, then you're probably looking at the 2024 6 and an 8th that's in pounds, and that's currently trading at about £106 a bond, but that's still a yield to maturity of around 4.9%, which again, could be a lot worse. So for genuine income seekers, again, if you buy at 106, the bond's going to redeem at 100, remember. So you're going to lose 6 quid on the trade, but that's going to be factored into your yield to maturity, which is around 4.9% right now. Every year, you're going to get £6, 12.5p in coupons, but because you're paying 106, obviously your running yield is lower and your yield to maturity is lower because you've got to factor in the £6 capital loss.
Yeah, okay, cool stuff.
So as you say, not necessarily one for momentum jockeys, but if you're looking for income, I suspect there are worse options, particularly given that inflation's still only running at 2.
Well, exactly. It's a good option because at the moment, the markets have been, decidedly going nowhere or a bit volatile of late. I mean, I've been looking around at different options. I do like the small cap, micro cap space, but, it's been a bit volatile of late.
I've been struggling to find value recently, Justin, which is why I've only come at one stock this week, and it's one that I've got wrong. There are a few things that I've been looking at, a few companies that I'd liked that have just run up very strongly in the last 3 months, and I've kind of missed them. So I'm sort of waiting to see. I've got a hit list, but a lot of them have got, sharp down and then a massive leg up for the last 3 months. I'm just kind of holding my keeping my powder dry at the minute.
Yeah, well, do you know what I've been doing? I've been looking around, just looking at ETFs, right? And there's some dividend-paying ones there I quite like.
That's
but,
correct.
But you'll have a laugh here. And for the new investor, I think they're ideal because they're obviously one by instant diversification and decent return. I think the UK dividend one pays around 6% and it's across all, 50 of the biggest companies or best dividends. And they are screened to see if they've got dividend cover and all that stuff. So it takes the legwork out of it for you. But do you know what? You're going to laugh at this. I bought an ETF yesterday. Have a guess which country.
Country? ETF.
Yeah, it's a country ETF, yeah. It covers the biggest stocks in this country. Now, it's a country. Yeah, the country has had really bad news of late.
Argentina.
Close. A turkey. Ooh. Turkey.
Turkey. Oh, yeah, there you go. I wasn't far wrong. A Turkish ETF.
Yeah, yeah.
I got our head of trading, but making himself a cup of tea in the kitchen next to me, looking at me as if I'm some sort of mental defective.
Well, I think I am. Tell him the guy I'm talking to is defective, because I just thought, do you know what? I think they've had their worst news. They've hit recession.
Well, there we are.
That
cheap
was expected.
Stocks, bad, you know, cheap yeah. stocks, good news. Don't get them cheap stocks, bad news, you do. So yeah, there we are.
There we are. We'll see if it turns out to be a turkey.
We will see.
Yeah, marvellous. Russ, have a nice weekend.
Have a lovely weekend, Justin.
Okay. It's time for the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. They are at five, GCM Resources, GCM. At four, Proactis Holdings, that's PRH. At three, Bacchanora Lithium. At two, HZM, Horizonte Minerals, of course. Jeremy Martin on the podcast yesterday did a very good show there. Talked about nickel, and he knows his stuff, Jeremy. Fair play, he knows what's going on. Number one most followed company is Bidstack Group, BIDS, a company I'm genuinely excited about. I think it has huge potential. The space they're in, which is native in-game advertising, and do you know what? And no one else does this at the moment. And they are a trailblazer. Massive industry gaming, huge. And there's big players trying to get into it, trying to get influential. And I think one of the areas that Bidstack are opening up is this sort of native dynamic in-game advertising, you know, which gaming is going to cloud, and that will even benefit them. So they're not only in a hot sector, they're a hot sector within a hot sector, you know, so very hot. And I wouldn't be surprised if they keep doing what they're doing, and James came on the podcast and talked about the potential. If they do what they say they're going to do, I think they'll be a target for one of the big players. I really do. Let's be honest, it's ads and it's gaming. Ads is big, digital advertising is massive, gaming is big, streaming is big, and there are some big players trying to grab some space there. Top five most liked RNSs are as follows. At five, LVCG, supply of first dinosaur models to China. It's Live Company Group, of course. At four, Europa Metals, EUZ, interim results. At three, UK Oil and Gas, final results for the year ended 30th September. Sorry. At two, United Oil and Gas, shareholder conference call. And number one most liked RNS came from UK Oil and Gas. That's all production update. That's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Muchos appreciado.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Every business has an ambition. PayPal Open is the platform designed to help you grow into yours. With business loans so you can expand and access to hundreds of millions of PayPal customers worldwide. And your customers can pay all the ways they want. With PayPal, Venmo, Pay Later, and all major cards. So you can focus on scaling up. When it's time to get growing, there's one platform for all business. PayPal Open. Grow today at paypalopen.com. Loans subject to approval in available locations.